Thanks for the introduction, Alex. So I'll be presenting work on a novel architecture for overlay multicast. This is joint work with Aditya Ganjam and Huey Zhang at CMU, with Eugene Ng at Rice, with Ion Stoica at UC Berkeley, with Bobby Bhattacharjee at UMD, and my advisor, Peter Druschel, at Max Planck Institute for Software Systems. So in these systems, the participants organize themselves into some kind of an overlay structure to distribute content. Every participant contributes part of his upstream bandwidth to forward content to other fellow peers. As a result of this, the overhead of distributing content is shared amongst the participants themselves. In contrast to centralized solutions, the benefit is that the multicast source can have a small fixed amount of bandwidth irrespective of the number of participants. And in contrast to IP multicast, no network level support is needed. So this paradigm has been used for a variety of applications, most of which fall into two of these categories. So the first such application is that of webcasting special events like conference talks, sport events, and even personal social gatherings like parties. In the recent past, two protocols, the ESM and the T-Mesh, as we know, has been used to webcast popular conferences like SIGCOM and SOSP. I wish they webcasted NSDI too. And the other more recent application is that of peer-to-peer internet television. In this application, there are several different streams. There are several different channels which stream different content. And the users switch across these channels very frequently. As a result of this, the membership churn in these applications is higher than that of webcasting a single event. Additionally, in these systems require low channel switching delays, something that current systems are not good at handling. So given the amount of work in this area, the first thing you might be wondering is why listen to another overlay multicast talk? So I will show you in this paper that we had an interesting architectural insight, which is essentially to factor out the control mechanisms into a separate overlay and share this control overlay across different data dissemination channels. It turns out that the benefits of this architecture significantly outweigh the cost of having this separate overlay. And I'll show in this talk that this architecture supports the single tree, multi-tree, and the mesh-based system, and in particular, it improves the performance of the tree-based systems under high membership churn. So brief background. In these systems, as I said, they form an overlay structure to disseminate content. In the example here, I show a single tree structure. And once this tree is formed, the content is pushed down the source, down the links of the tree. Additionally, this structure is optimized for efficient data dissemination. In this case, it is optimized for latency and bandwidth. The nodes with high bandwidth are made the interior nodes in the tree, and the ones with lower bandwidth are pushed to the leaves. And additionally, the nodes tend to choose parents with low delay, and as you observe, you have few long links as possible in this tree structure. Now, these systems also have some kind of a control mechanism to build and repair this structure under membership churn. For instance, when this node A's parent departs from the group, it stops receiving content, and as a result, it needs some kind of control mechanism to locate a new parent. So now we'll take a particular example of the ESM protocol and see how the control works. So over here, as I said, the data overlay is optimized for latency and bandwidth, and for control, it uses an underlying gossip protocol to distribute the membership information. As a result of the gossip, every node knows a partial list of other members in this overlay. For instance, the node A knows of participants B and C. Now, when this node A's parent departs, it now uses this list and probes random nodes in this list to see if they can take him on as the parent, in this case, B and C. And additionally, when it does this probes, it optimizes for latency and bandwidth amongst the choices and chooses the appropriate parent. So what it turns out is that although the data overlay structure is optimized for efficiency, the control mechanism and this online probing method is not scalable. And this is because with increasing scale and churn, this partial list tends to be increasingly stale, and more overhead is expended in online probing. We observed in this work that this control and data efficiency is not just unique to ESM, but in many of the protocols, they optimize for data efficiency at the expense of efficient control. So the insight that we had in this work is to separate out the control mechanisms into a separate overlay. And this overlay is optimized for efficient peer selection. So in the figure here, I show the same set of nodes in red, which are part of two separate overlays. So on the left, you see the data overlay. And on the right, they are part of another separate control overlay. And we see later in the talk what the structure of this overlay is. And this separation avoids the data and control efficiency trade-offs. So once you have separated out the control to a separate overlay, this control overlay can now be shared across different data channels. For instance, the members in the BBC and the CNN channel can now be part of the shared overlay, which is optimized for control. Now, the benefit of the sharing is that the control overlay membership is independent of the data overlay membership. What this means is that when a node now switches across channels, although the data overlay structure is disrupted, the control overlay structure is not affected by membership churn. So we asked ourselves, what is this control service that this overlay should provide? And what we observed is, irrespective of the organization of the data overlay, the fundamental task in these systems, the control task, is that to acquire an overlay neighbor. For instance, in the single tree, you need to acquire a parent who has spare capacity, good performance, and is not a descendant. In the multi-tree, instead of one parent, you need to acquire multiple parents in a way that your path to the source is node disjoint. In the mesh, you need to acquire the mesh neighbors in a way that they are sufficiently random to ensure good path diversity in the mesh. It turns out that this neighbor's acquisition or selection with different policies can be efficiently implemented using this specialized Anycast primitive. Now, this primitive has three arguments. The first is the group identifier, which is essentially the channel whom you want to join. The second is a constraint that should be satisfied by the eligible neighbors. And the third is an objective function that should be maximized amongst the eligible neighbors. I will explain these concepts using an example. So let's take the example of the single tree data overlay that a node wants to join. Now, in this data overlay, I've taken the example that every node can support at maximum two children, and as you observe at the leaves, they have some stubs which indicates that they have spare capacity. So when you join this data overlay, you need to locate a parent who has spare bandwidth, and additionally, as an optimization, you would like to locate a parent which minimizes the depth in the tree, because this has been shown that shallow trees are more robust to churn. So you would do this by specifying a constraint which says that the neighbor should have spare bandwidth. What this does is it now rules out the members which have now turned white over here in the figure. Additionally, amongst these nodes which have spare bandwidth, you apply the objective function, which minimizes the distance to the multicast source. What this does is it additionally now rules out amongst the eligible neighbors the ones that are at a higher depth. I have shown here just an example of the single tree data overlay, but what we observed in this work is that this primitive is powerful enough to build much more complex structures like the multi-tree. So the summary is, this Anycast primitive that I talked about is powerful enough to express the control needs of different data overlays. So now that we have expressed the control needs of different data overlays using this Anycast primitive, the question is, can this control overlay efficiently implement such a primitive? And the idea we had is to use structured overlays. So it turns out that structured overlays provide an efficient anycast substrate. Now, structured overlays are popular, are referred to as DHT in the community. So in this case, the members across different channels are now part of this structured overlay, which I show on the right. And this structured overlay is optimized for control. Also note that the structure of the data overlays in the left are not constrained by the structure of the control overlay. And they can continue to be optimized for efficient data dissemination in the data overlay. So the key abstraction that the control overlay provides is that for each data overlay, there's a control tree that is embedded in this structured overlay. So I take an example here of the single tree data overlay on the left. And these very nodes are part of the structured overlay, and they are connected using a control tree. So observe that the nodes in this control tree may contain nodes that are not part of this data overlay, but who are part of the shared control overlay. Secondly, the structure of this control tree is completely independent of the structure of the data overlay. The data overlay can be either single tree, multi-tree, or mesh, anything. We will show later how this control tree can be used to do aggregation and efficiently implement the anycast primitive. So now I will briefly give an overview of how the structured overlays can very efficiently build and repair these control trees. So I'm sure you're familiar with DHTs, but as an overview, in these systems, every node can route a message to a particular identifier in the overlay in log n hops. And it can be shown that the paths from different channel members, shown in red here, to a particular key or the group identifier forms a tree structure. And this tree structure is the control tree that I was talking about for this data overlay. So once you have formed the control tree, we use this control tree to do aggregation. It aggregates the state information about the different peers and uses that to implement the anycast primitive. So let's take an example. So in the single tree data overlay that I talked about, you have a state variable which keeps track of whether a node has spare bandwidth or not. So we define the variable cap, which says the number of spare capacity slots that I have in the data overlay. So observe that these values for the different data overlay members are now shown as the leaf positions in the control tree. We then use aggregation to aggregate these values in the control tree. And in this case, we use the operator sum shown here, which with increasing levels of the tree tells you the total number of spare capacity slots in the data overlay. So here at the root, you know that there are 5 spare capacity slots in the entire data overlay. So we'll take another example of aggregation. And in this case, what we'll do is we'll define a new variable called depth, which is the advertised tree depths of the nodes in the data overlay. So observe here on the leaves now, a node advertises a value of infinity if it doesn't have spare bandwidth, and otherwise advertises the value of its depth in the data overlay. Note that this is not the depth in the control overlay, but the depth in the data overlay. So again, the aggregation is done, this time with a different operator, which is the min operator. And finally, at the root, the value of 1 suggests that there is a node in the data overlay which has a depth of 1. So now we will see how this aggregated state in the control tree can be used to efficiently implement the anycast primitive. So with the same example of the single tree data overlay again, over here, you want to join this data overlay and locate a node with spare capacity and which is at a lower depth. So over here, the ones that are shaded in red, light red, are the ones with spare capacity. So when you issue this request, the anycast hits an intermediate node in the control tree. At this point, you have the option of doing a depth-first search in this control tree to locate the appropriate member. However, what we do is we use the aggregated state to improve this anycast traversal by pruning subtrees that are redundant or not desired. For instance, in this subtree, there is no node in the data overlay which has pair capacity. So instead of going down, you go towards the root of the control tree. At this point in the DFS, you have two options of going down either of the subtrees. And observe here that the aggregated values at the subtrees denote that in each of these subtrees, there is pair capacity, namely a capacity of 3 in the middle subtree and a capacity of 2 in the right subtree. And in this case, what you do is apply the objective function, which tries to minimize for depth. Thereby, in this example, you go down the right subtree, and you get a neighbor which has spare capacity and who has the minimum depth in the data overlay, which is 1. So the summary is that this aggregation in the control tree enables you to do an efficient depth-first search to find the appropriate neighbor. So now I'll briefly describe some evaluation results to show the power of this architecture. So we used the ModelNet setup, and we had 350 nodes in the data overlay. And the members in the data overlay had heterogeneous forwarding bandwidths. And they switched across channels in the data overlay with a mean stay time of 5 minutes, and this was exponential distribution. And we used the metrics, channel switching delay, the streaming quality that the nodes received, and the control overhead incurred on this control plane. So firstly, I will show here the cumulative distribution of the join delays. So the join delay is the time from the instant a node joined the data overlay to when it started receiving content. So I show here the join delays of the ESM protocol. So observe here that 20% of the joins have delays more than 20 seconds. Now then I will show you the results of how our architecture was used to support a single tree. So firstly, in our architecture, when you want to join a particular data overlay, the first step is to join the control overlay. And this graph shows you what is the join delay when a node joins for the first time. That is, it has to incur the overhead of joining the control overlay. And observe that these delays are high. Once it joins the control overlay, however, the rest of the delays are very low. As shown over here, for the single tree, 99% of the joins have delays less than 1.5 seconds. Now, with the multi-tree enabled by our architecture, 99% of the delays were less than 3 seconds. And the delays in the multi-tree were slightly higher because you had to acquire parents in different stripe trees. And in our case, there were 5 stripe trees. We also used our architecture to support the mesh-based system. And the join delays for mesh-based are shown in green here. So observe that here, in spite of the architecture SAR being able to acquire the mesh neighbors very fast, the mesh-based systems incur high join delays because of the inherent delays in the randomized swarming protocol in these systems. So now that I've shown you that this architecture enables efficient control, I will show you results of what is the benefits of this efficient control. So the benefit, essentially, is to be able to repair these overlay structures very quickly under churn. So observe here on the x-axis, so I show you the cumulative distribution, and on the x-axis is the streaming quality. And we measure here the fraction of packets received by a node. ESM, with its inefficient control mechanism, results in poor streaming quality in this membership churn environment. However, when using an architecture which has efficient control, you get very good streaming quality, as is shown by the single tree and multi-tree. With the mesh, the streaming quality is not as good as the tree-based systems because of the inefficiencies of the randomized swarming protocol. So at this point, given that you have seen all these benefits, the first question that might come to your mind is that what is the control overhead? Given that you're maintaining a separate overlay, you would expect that this control overhead would be high. It turns out, however, that in this architecture, while supporting the single tree, multi-tree, or the mesh, the control overhead is actually lower than that of ESM. And the absolute values, as you see, are something near the average value, is less than 5 messages a second. It turns out that the reason for this is that in spite of the cost of having a separate control overlay, the savings due to the increased control efficiency actually reduce the overall overhead. So we also used this architecture, as I mentioned earlier, to support much more complex structures like the multi-tree. And I showed you some of those results. So here in particular, I will demonstrate the power of this Anycast primitive. So we built a multi-tree system which tries to build interior node disjoint stripe trees. And in addition, it tries to ensure that the forwarding bandwidths in the different stripe trees are balanced. So in the way these systems work is they contribute their bandwidth in one particular stripe tree, which is called the primary stripe. And in contrast to previous systems like SplitStream, where the primary stripe is chosen based on the node's identifier in the structured overlay, over here, you have the flexibility of choosing the primary stripe as the stripe which has, at that instant, the minimum amount of forwarding bandwidth. As a result, it greedily tries to balance the resources across the stripes. And the benefit of this approach is that under heterogeneous bandwidth environments with scarce resources, like resource index of 1.23 as shown here, you can balance the bandwidths across the different stripes and thereby not sacrifice on interior node disjointness. So in the graph over here, the details are that I show the group size and the maximum resources in a stripe and the minimum resources in the stripe. And observe how the minimum resources in the stripe, shown in blue, are higher than the instantaneous group size, meaning that you can build these trees without sacrificing interior node disjointness. So there are more results in the paper essentially evaluating these systems under different conditions. So we evaluated flash crowd experiments, experiments with higher churn, like 2 minutes stay time instead of the 5 minutes that I showed you. Then we evaluated with churn in the control overlay. We also had Planet Lab experiments comparing the single tree structure supported by this architecture with the ESM protocol. So finally, I will conclude that we have presented a new architecture for overlay multicast. And we have observed that the control efficiency is the key to the performance of these systems, especially the tree-based systems. And we have showed you that using Anycast based on structured overlays enables you to have a powerful, efficient control for tree-based systems. And as a result of this efficient control, you can enable fast channel switching with tree-based overlays. And this is a step towards designing overlay-based peer-to-peer IPTV. At this point, I will be happy to take questions.
I'm Bo Zhang from Rice University.
Okay.
So I like the idea of decoupling. The control plane and data plane. But the concern is does this decoupling also introduce a kind of a single point failure, because now all the data plane,
yes,
all the data overlay,
yes,
depends on the single control overlay. And according to your presentation, there is no admission control to the control overlay, right? So you can, all the nodes can join the control overlay freely. You don't have to forward the data traffic. You don't have to pay bandwidth.
Yes.
You just forward some very small amount of control traffic.
Yes.
So what if the malicious user basically joins the control overlay and then compromise the control overlay, all the data overlay?
So this is a good point. So actually, in this work, we didn't exactly address freeloading and malicious behavior in the control overlay. And you're right that once you have shared this control overlay across the different channels, you need to trust more people than what you would do if you had separate data overlays. But I believe that systems which tackle freeloading and malicious behavior in structured overlays and unstructured overlays, those mechanisms could be applied here. But We haven't looked at these mechanisms yet. Thanks.